up a little bit late.
And Ken.
And Ken Kaler. I'm sure he'll be here. First item on our agenda is the cargo container issue, and I see there's a lot of you out here, probably pretty much most of, all of you, except the police chief and Daryl and the reporter for the Columbia Basin Herald. And I'd like to, if you'd like to get up and speak on this issue and talk about it, I'd like you to come up and introduce yourself and let us know what you think here. We started talking about this issue here a month or so ago. At the present time, there are cargo containers in our commercial and industrial areas, which don't seem to be a problem now. So I guess with that, I'd like to hear from businesses that have cargo containers in their yard and what they feel about this. Go ahead.
My name is Larry Linderman. I'm owner of AV Labs, 64 North Broadway, and I'm probably the reason most of you are here today then. Started that business with a couple partners in 2001. 2002, we got the building pretty well outfitted, except we needed some additional storage space. We rented a cargo container, had it placed outside the business. And I received a letter from the city saying you cannot have a cargo container that is visible from the city street, along with a copy of the ordinance declaring so. Being the new business on the block, I wasn't one to buck City Hall. I made arrangements for other storage facilities at a little higher expense, but and not quite as handy as being right there at the facility, and had the cargo container removed. I didn't work at that business, but I worked at a place on the south edge of town, living south and west of Othello. My daily commute brought me just barely to the south border of Othello. Spring of 2008, I quit my job there and went to work at my own business. My daily commute brings me up the full length of Broadway from the south city limits to Main Street. Twice a day or four times a day I make that trip, and I see all these cargo containers in town, and I'm wondering why I'm singled out and not able to have one and everyone else can. I didn't understand the reason for the discrimination.
And that is the purpose for this discussion.
I brought that question up to the enforcement officer in town earlier, about a month or two ago, as to why it's okay for the other businesses to have them and I couldn't. And I guess that's probably what led to this today.
Exactly.
So I just wanted to come and let everybody know why you're here. Thank you.
Thanks, Larry. Well, I've made it a point to drive Broadway and I don't see them. I mean, they're there, but you really have to look for them. And I think that the cargo containers at this point aren't an issue, but they could be if they weren't regulated in some way, shape, or form. And that's why the council they're asking for your input. We're asking for your input to see what you want to see in our industrial areas. I don't see anything wrong with cargo containers, but if you go down Railroad Avenue going into Pasco, you see where they built up with railroad cars and cargo containers and made their too high, and they've made the perimeter of their property, and I have a real problem with something like that. But as long as it's done in good taste and does not take away from the other neighbors around you, I guess I don't have a problem with cargo containers. But we do need to come up with a way to regulate them, and so you don't put them right out by the curb on Broadway and keep them in the back of your lot. Just some suggestions that I have thought about. Bob, do you have something to say?
Yeah. My name is Bob Borsma, and I own Washington Carriers, and I have a cargo container on Broadway. And as most of you probably know, I converted a hay shed into a refrigerated storage for a firm here in town, SVZ. In doing that, we needed additional power, and so I obtained a 20-foot cargo container and put it on pedestals and anchored it to the ground and used that as a powerhouse. I guess in doing so, it seemed to be the most economical situation at the time, and also from a fire and safety standpoint, the container is all metal except for the wooden floor, and so I thought this would make a very good power room. We obtained a permit from DL&I, and they approved it as a power room, and Vista put in a pole and brought us power. So I think that, and we painted the container so it is the light color of the buildings, the garish white. And my question is, in looking at the documents here, it states that the existing containers are good for 2 years, and then we have to have a permit extension.
That was a suggestion that came about at one of our meetings. We're throwing ideas out. We need you guys to throw ideas back so that we can come up with an organized plan of attack here, and everybody's happy.
Okay, well, in my particular circumstances, like I say, I have poured piers, and I am anchored securely to the ground with an area underneath the container so that we can keep it clean underneath there. But being it holds two refrigeration units, maybe some of you have seen it, the refrigeration units are on top of the container. That was done to conserve space and another safety reason. And so my question is, should the council see fit that there has to happen to be a certain type of specifications for footings or foundations, I would like that to be considered carefully for existing containers, because that would be quite expensive in my case. Thank you.
In your case, your container, you put your stuff in the container. You've got refrigeration equipment in there.
On top of it, yes.
On top of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's in it? Is it inside?
Power panel and switching gear and light switches.
My name is Micah Gearhart with Southern Cross. Mine's probably the most visible, I suppose, if you drive up and down Broadway. I noticed what Bob had done a couple of years ago, and we needed the additional storage. The building we're in didn't accommodate everything we needed to do. We looked at Bob's, and he had spent the money, the additional money, because there are different, what do you want to call it, classifications, qualities, conditions, I guess, of containers. Bob had purchased what they called it, a one-tripper, and we did as well. Those usually run probably double what just an average container runs, cost-wise. We wanted something that was neat. We didn't want something to look like it was all banged up and beat up and been through World War III. Ours is gray. Outside of a few numbers on it, it doesn't have anybody's name as far as container, cargo, ship line, which I felt that given the color that it was, may not necessarily blend in with the neighborhood, but it doesn't stand out either. I mean, it's noticeable from the street. It's probably closer to the street than any of the others that I observe in town. But I think it blends in fairly well with what else is there in the neighborhood. I guess suggestions that I've thought about since we received the notice some time ago, or a couple of months ago, whatever it's been now, is as Bob noted, cargo containers are a fairly economical way to increase storage, have added storage. And to be quite honest with you, they seal up. We also have in town, we have a couple of rental storage units. One, they get a lot of dust and dirt in them. The cargo container is sealed up, don't have the rodent problem, don't have the dust problem. I mean, they're a clean unit. I guess if I was to make any suggestion to the city of Othello, as far as their policies on regarding containers, it would be that, number one, they don't be an eyesore, obviously. I mean, that's what we're trying to eliminate. Whether it be that they're painted, if they're beat up and well-used containers, that they have some sort of a siding, you know, fastened, attached to it, so that they look appropriate, you know, so they don't look like they've been through the war. Looks red.
Where is yours located?
885 South Broadway.
Is it behind your office building?
It's out in front of the Quonset, across the street from Central Washington Concrete.
Okay.
Premix, what are they, ready? Some premix. But I'll tell you this, I see some of the other containers or storage units that aren't necessarily cargo containers. They're probably at one time were some sort of a freight trailer, a reefer unit or an old dry van that somebody's yanked.
Yeah, there is a difference.
Yeah.
Big difference.
And they look ratty. In my opinion, and I would I'd be the first to say, hey, City of Othello, I have no problem. You want to go after the guys with those type of storage units, but the cargo containers, you want to make some sort of regulations, you know, as far as a conditional permit. You know, I have no problem, because as I was talking with Doyle the other day, said, Doyle, in this town, we have some eyesore areas, and you know, if you got to rein in on containers, I'm not saying that I think they serve a purpose, and I don't think that there's a problem with them. And as long as Mayor, as you mentioned, they're done tastefully. I mean, you got a nice looking storage facility, but the ones that are beat up and ratty looking, hey, those things either need to have some sort of siding put on them. Something to dress them up, doll them up to where they're not an eyesore.
Or a coat of paint or
something
to make them.
But even with a coat of paint, I've seen some that they can slap a coat of paint on it where they're beat up, they still look a little ratty. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't look very presentable, I'll put it that way. They kind of stick out. But the ones in certain areas and in the south end of town, there are certain businesses that have these trailers that were trailers at one time, those are the storage units should be targeting. I mean, they look a little rough.
The cargo containers are dust proof, they're waterproof, they're rodent proof, they got a lot of benefits. These old narrow trailers, they're not conducive to where we want to go here, but
no.
How do we come up with some guidelines,
regulations,
and I think the conditional use. You know, I was talking to Eamon after the last meeting, and I made the comment during the meeting that the cost of a conditional use permit seems to be pretty high in regard to a building permit to build the same size structure.
Yeah, the article that I read in the paper, somewhere around, what was it, $1,500?
$1,500.
Yeah, that's kind of steep.
Yeah, if you were going to build a 10 by, what, or 8, what are those, Bob?
Well, they're 20 by 8.
20
so
by
8,
or you
feet.
Get them a little longer, too. Yeah,
get an 8 before you.
But the cost of building a permanent structure and getting a building permit is considerably less than that for the same size structure.
Exactly. And I, you know, I thought about this. I thought, you know, okay, so if the city wanted to charge us, you know, $50, something that, along that line, to cover some costs for the fellow to drive around, the enforcement officer to drive around and make sure that everybody's staying on the same page, okay. The $1,000 to $2,000, in that case, we better run down to Walmart and start buying up these little storage sheds, you know. But, I mean, that isn't the way we want to go, and I'm sure the city doesn't want to go that direction either. But, I will agree with you. There should be some regulations, but I think that they serve a purpose, and I don't think that the city should throw them out.
Yeah, and I think another important point to bring up here would be that you're using them to store parts in, or
yeah, that's correct.
Bob's using it to put his. We don't want people putting them in and renting the units out for storage. That would be another negative here.
In some of the travels I've made, I have seen in places that they have used those, but they have done it in a clean, I mean, they've used, say, they're all the same length, all the same color, they've all been painted. I think in one place I was at, as I remember, they had them where they had some sort of roof, they had them in a row.
You know, they do that for a reason, though. They'll bring them in and they'll buy a piece of ground, a land, and then they'll put these storage units on there. And then whenever the ground value, land value comes up, then they just move them storage units off and then they sell the land. It's not a permanent fixture or a permanent structure.
But I think as long as they're done, you know, and kept up, and we're not advertising for, what is it, Harrington and some of these other cargo container lines, I don't see the problem.
My name is Bill Burke, and I have some property down on Broadway, the Sofa Gallery, and they have a storage container that I put in years ago, and I put footings under it just to get it up off the ground so a person could spray weeds and keep control of the stuff underneath of it, and so it's not off the ground a whole lot, but it is off the ground, so it's just not sitting there. And I think that's important on a container, that you don't have to put a big slab under it, but footings are good if you're going to allow them to be maintained. And also, I painted the Sofa Gallery building, which in turn painted the container to match that. So it's really, it's not an eyesore in my mind, just because it's completely back to the back of the property. And it's not in front. And he, the owner of the Sofa Gallery, uses it to store excess furniture. And there's lights in there. There's no air conditioning or anything other than there's power for lights, so at night if he has to get in there. But that's the only thing that I have had that has not been broke into. And all the businesses, he's been broke into, I've been broke to, so that is a pretty secure building, and it's dry. So I really would like to see that continuous. You know, Bob's got some points, but yeah, address new containers coming in and make them, clean them up and do something, just don't sit them on the ground. If they have to have footings like I did, or Bob did, I think that's, you need control of that. It's important that you have something looking good. You know, you're maintaining sidewalks around and addressing a lot of different things. So that's kind of in the, I don't know what else to say. I think if you have additional units come in, you should permit them as see fit, but have some control, not right there on the front of the street, like you said, Shannon, and so that's what I have to say. So,
thanks, Bill.
Everyone that is here tonight are certainly good neighbors and do a good job trying to keep their properties in compliance and looking well. But there are those out there that don't. You know, the one I did notice is got a wrecked car sitting up on top of it and that type of thing. You know, those guys aren't here tonight. And we understand, we appreciate the input. Is there anybody else that would like to say something?
I just got a question for Larry. Larry, where did you have your container? What, north, south, east, west side?
South side.
South side. In the fenced-in area, or?
Yeah, within the fenced-in area.
So was it an 8 by 20 or an 8 by 40? Or?
About 20.
20?
I'd like to follow up, but I think these are all good points and good discussion. I think if the city's going to appoint somebody to go down the street and say, yes, yours is okay, you can have it, no, yours isn't okay, it's got to go, I think that's going to be a tough situation to maintain. I think there either needs to be a rule that you can have it or you can't.
Well, that's what the conditional use permit is going to be all about. You can have them if you set them up professionally and on footings and they blend in with what's going on around them. There are some down here that, like I say, they got wrecked cars piled up on top of them. That's not acceptable.
Right. Okay. Well,
yeah, but so that person. That person or that business will probably be told, well, you know, you need to do it a little different, maybe take the wrecked cars off the top and paint your unit or whatever. But we're not going to have anybody saying you can have them, you can't.
Okay. Well, that's,
yeah,
I mean,
that's
as far
that just
as
not good.
The appearance of it, that's kind of what you're getting at.
Well, we, yeah.
Somebody has to decide what's appropriate.
What kind of conditions that they'll be allowed.
At the same time, you know, when mine was in question, there was no gray area. It was black or white. There was no suggestion to burn it, to paint it, to disguise it, to do anything. It is not allowed to be there.
Mm-hmm. And you were you happened to be the person that started this issue, and it needed to be addressed. And you probably should have raised just a little more of a fuss, and you wouldn't have had to move it. We'd have worked with you, and we'd
have. First business I've owned is City Hall says you do this, and they give me a copy of the law that says yes, you have to do this. I read it. Well, I go, hey, I'm going to do that, and so I did it.
Well, you know, we appreciate you doing that.
I never really notice too much else because I don't come up. I drive all over town every day.
Mm-hmm.
But this last year, where I drive the full length of that street every day, and just the more times I see these, the more it kind of eats away at me.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you.
So I thought I'd ask.
Well, you have my apology, and you're the catalyst that kind of got this ball rolling here, and we're going to take care of the issue here. And where did you haul your container to?
I was renting it. I had the company come pick it up.
Oh, did you? Okay. Council have any more questions?
Well, I do, Shannon. I was like you. I drove down there and I kept driving and I'm like, am I missing them? because they do blend in. The other thing is, Darryl, I would like you to come back because you said there were some places that didn't have it. I would like you to come back and show me if there's some like cities like ours, because I think Othello is unique unto itself. And I think they serve a real purpose in the area that they're in. I don't think that we need them in our residential areas. But that's, you know, I mean, I just couldn't see. I didn't see the wrecking ball, the trailer ball.
In the
pictures.
Councilwoman, I agree that the issues for Othello are issues for Othello. And the response I had last week or at the council meeting was in response to a question, what are some of the policies in other cities? But when it really comes down to it, the uniqueness of Othello is going to dictate what your requirements are and what the standards are for the city. And we really shouldn't use other cities as a comparison. We really should be making decisions based on what's best for Othello itself. And I think that's what you're trying to do by getting input from the citizens and looking at a variety of options and seeing how we can make these work. So okay, I think that's a very good approach.
Because you had said last week other cities were not letting them. So do you have anybody that has an outline of what they would look like?
Maybe if we could find another community that does allow them and take a look at their what they have to work within to have them there.
And Mayor, I think if you look at our standards in the city today, I think our standards are quite good. The question that really brought this forward was that there wasn't a consistent effort towards either enforcement or applying the requirements for conditional use permit. But I don't think there was ever any doubt that the standards that we have for placement of these were actually very good and appropriate standards. Our code does require that they be placed on some sort of a platform or foundation. It requires that they be painted a color that's, you know, harmonious with the surrounding buildings and surrounding area. That it be off the street frontage rather than in front of the street. It's not the predominant feature. And I think our code does an excellent job, actually, of outlining what the requirements are. The issue has been that there just has not been a consistent application of those codes over the years. And before we laid down this big enforcement hammer, we wanted to make sure that the council was aware of the issue and that it was going to affect a number of property owners, and that as we move forward, we all are in agreement as to the policy of the city in dealing with these. And that's really the reason that it's before you, is because we wanted to make sure that we were following the wishes of the council and applying the policy of the code. But in terms of criteria, I think our code does an excellent job.
Well, I think we can have both. I think we can allow the containers and not drop what we expect our community to be. I'm not saying we need to lower our standard. I just think that we need to keep the bar high as far as containers go. I don't think that just trailers, the old narrow trailers that are obsolete anymore, should be just plopped on the ground and made storage. So I think we've got some work to do here to define.
Our fee is way too high.
Yeah, the conditional use hearing that we're imposing every 2 years. Yeah, because we've got to go through hearing examiner, and I guess that's what.
Why is that so high, Daryl?
Well, because there's the cost involved with the hearing examiner. He's a contractor for the city. His time adds up pretty quickly when you go through a public hearing process, the notification process, the actual review period, and the issuing of the report. That time winds up running a bill of about $1,500 on average for a conditional use permit. And the code requires that the applicant reimburse the city for those costs. I heard one suggestion tonight, and I'm paraphrasing this, but I heard a suggestion that some sort of an annual placement permit, where maybe similar to a business license process, where as part of your business license, if you have a container, you're looking at that on a yearly basis and ensuring that all of the requirements of the code are being met. And the code requirements are quite clear. We could go out to a site and say, you're meeting all of these requirements administratively, and do that, I think, pretty effectively.
What is the life of a cargo container sitting on the ground? I mean, that might be a good idea, because 15 years from now, they might be getting a little bit thin and rusty
the condition, those containers are they're undercoated because they're used to going on ship and combating salt water. So, in my case, at least I'll speak, mine was one trip. It loaded in China, it came over here, and it unloaded, and I bought it. Okay?
Yeah, they're like very good trippers. They're like, I mean, you open them up, they're like new.
I mean, they'll last 50 years, won't they, if you keep them
in? And especially if you keep them up off the ground, where you get ventilation underneath, you don't have deterioration, rotting.
Just like a house, just having airflow.
you know, if you take it out and throw it in the dirt, yeah, obviously it's probably going to start to fall.
But maybe there's a way to work around the conditional use permit and come up with another, like you just mentioned, maybe an annual, just an annual small amount, annual fee.
It seems like we regulate a number of things that way already, and whether it's a health department permit for restaurants or whether it's a business license process, that is just kind of this timetable set up on a yearly basis where businesses are used to renewing whatever agreement they have. And it seems like this would be one of those uses that could easily be renewed. It would take just a visit from staff to the site to see that nothing's changed and that they haven't added four more containers that they weren't supposed to have or something like that. But it would seem to me that there is a reasonable approach to doing that annual review without having to go through a very expensive process of either placing the containers or doing a two-year renewal. And that we could certainly explore that. And I would suspect that there are models from other cities that we could look to on how they handle that approach and pattern ourselves after those successful ones.
Yeah. And we need to know that we're only talking about industrial and commercial. They're not allowed in residential areas inside the city limits at all, and never will be. I hope not.
And just to be clear, Mayor, even now they're also prohibited in the C1 commercial zone, which is Main Street and First. So
right.
Within that restricted commercial area, they're also prohibited. So only in the C2 and the industrial area are they allowed.
Good.
Is there any provision that there only be one per lot?
I believe our code currently does address that and that it does indicate one per lot. Now there's some discussion as to whether or not that's necessary because there's some areas where multiple cargo containers or storage containers might be one necessary by the business and two could be placed in a manner that would be just as attractive as one. So I'm not sure that the restriction is the key. It's the size of the lot, perhaps, and the location on the lot is more important than the number. I would say stacking is probably creates some difficulties, but as long as they're on the ground and they're well placed and well cared for, the number probably isn't as critical as the location.
Have you guys? I mentioned the one on Railroad Avenue going into Pasco. By the Caterpillar and the Perkins place there. You've seen where he's got those. That's what we want to avoid. And we appreciate you guys coming and giving us some ideas here, and we will come up with a solution here that will both be winners. Everybody will be a winner here. And cute and you, Larry. I wish you're the one that started this whole thing, and you know, we wasn't picking on you, but it took this to get it going. It took your issue to get it going.
And we can get pretty regulatory about how many per lot or how many per square foot, footings, placement, color. But our audience members are correct when we get to whether this is now has so many dents, it's not acceptable. That's a hard one. That'll be our hardest one to manage. And you almost need like a, I know some communities have like a beautification committee, and it's totally a subjective call. I mean, you can't have criteria as to that container is too beat up to be in my town. So that's a tough one that I don't know how we could address.
You, Bob, the containers, the container that you bought, what's it called? Is it a is there a class of container? One tripper,
yeah. But I mean, it's one tripper. That container was designed and built to make several trips. It's just that certain companies buy a container, it takes them a long time to fill it possibly, and then they ship it, and once their product is arrived on site, then they have no more use for it. And they do that because the steamship company charges for the containers by the day past 3 days. So if it takes 6 months for you to put your product into that container, you just go buy a container. Okay, so that's where the one-trip container comes from. It's not a specific model or make, it's just that the fact that it becomes for sale because it doesn't belong to a steamship line, it belongs to an individual. customer who no longer needs it and doesn't want to maybe transport it back to China or where it came from.
But then on the other end of that spectrum, there are some on the other end that are, they look like they've, you know, gone through a couple of wars. Yeah.
Probably half the cost.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people will pick those up because you can probably buy them for $1,000, $1,500.
They're cheap, yeah.
The 40 footers. The ones that Bob and I bought, they're 20 footers, but we probably paid $2,400 for them.
Daryl, do you know what the 20 footers compared to the 40 footers that we have in our community now, do you know what the percentage might be?
I don't, Mayor. I frankly, we didn't get into that much detail for those that were on site at this point. Okay.
The container that's behind the sofa gallery is a 40 footer.
Yeah, yours is a big one.
Yeah, that's a long one. I think they're the same width.
They're constructed the same way.
They're constructed the same way, and it's got two doors on the end.
Eleanor's going to be leaving us. She's not being rude. She has a family issue she needs to attend, and she stayed an extra 5 minutes. Thank you.
But I think these folks kind of are a standard we should base it on, because literally I have no idea, being in town for 30 years, that there was a container behind Sofa Factory. I did not know that.
And I almost got to drive around the building, and, you know, it's done in well. It's in good taste.
And I didn't realize Mr. Borsma's was a container. I've seen that built there with the refrigeration units on top, and it just kind of looks like a stout building.
Yeah, well, it was done that because of the refrigeration equipment is so valuable, we didn't want on the ground to get hit.
Mm. That's a traffic area.
Yeah, it's a traffic area, and there was big concerns. If you look at the other refrigeration units got down there, we have posts anymore.
And they're in a low traffic area, and right there where that one had to be, because of the power need, it was just inevitable that some trucker of mine would probably drive it.
Look, it comes down, I mean, if we told you no more containers, it would come down to a dollar issue. I mean, that's what is 90% of issues that we run into. So we're trying to be accommodating and yet keep our community standards good and making our community look nice.
Yeah, well, we tried to be good stewards of it, and realizing that it needed a foundation, realizing that it needed to be painted, and they are tight and they are safe, and that's, you know, we don't want somebody in there turning the power off in the middle of the night, or worse yet, on Friday afternoon when I've got a whole storage full of very expensive Perrier concentrates in there. So
they're very secure.
The other thing that I'd like to offer to the council is in the permitting of the container. I think it's a good idea. An annual fee, I'd have no problem with that at all. Conditional use permit is expensive and time consuming. I think that is way overkill. If you need, and we could all probably find it. If we needed specifications engineering-wise for stability, those containers were built by many major companies, and we could probably come up with a set of specs that says it can hold 10 containers on top of it instead of an ocean ship. So,
yeah.
But I think the fee that the gentleman talked about, the annual fee, would be very acceptable to those that used it.
We need to be able to address the other side of the coin here, that you're all good stewards of the community and you're here tonight, but not everybody is, and we need to kind of figure out how, like Mark says, you know, if you get a container coming in that looks like it, you know, was sent back from Iraq after a war or something, but we need to figure out a way to restrict that somewhat. There needs to be some restrictions, and we just have to figure that part out.
How do you, like a house is being run down, the yard's really bad and it's falling down, how do
Well, we're doing that in two or three residences in town right now, and eventually, it, you know, it goes to abatement and it's similar. We could come up with a similar, you know, with this annual inspection and this annual fee. We could, if you've got a real piece of junk and it's distracting from your neighbors, and everybody's mad at you because of it, and it doesn't conform, it doesn't look like yours or yours, we can tell that individual, well, you need to bring this standard up or get it out of here, one of the two, because I think those annual visits are important.
I think you could go right down the line what you're already doing with the inspection of property and not creating more fees or any more time as far as hiring somebody else just for containment, you know.
Okay, if there's nothing else, we'll go to the next item. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Second quarter report from Adams County Fire District number 5.
Well, this is for my finance for the city.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
My first half of the year report is in the packet. And I know it sounds very optimistic, and so I just wanted to show you a couple of things to let you know what's going on with the revenue. We started the year, our beginning fund balance, we started the year $10,000 higher than we anticipated at the beginning. And property tax is just a little bit under where it should be right now, but that's very typical because after the half of the year, after the first half of the year, we get the first half taxes in May and we get the second half in October, November. So the property taxes now will start laying behind until that time. But property taxes are becoming a real strong effect. At the midpoint of the year, they were more than 50%. The sales tax is an interesting one because the state, because of the streamlined sales tax initiative, thought that it would impact us negatively, and they started giving us mitigation money. But when you look at this number right here for sales tax, at the end of July, it should be 58.33%. It's 56.70, meaning we're only $13,395 behind in sales tax at the midpoint. So sales tax is doing just fine. I mean, we're staying just about where we have been. And then you look down here and you see we've got mitigation money and sales tax mitigation money of $37,374. And we didn't even budget for that because we had no idea we were going to be getting that. So this is a windfall right here.
Now, the number right above it. I need to interrupt. The amount budgeted, is that budgeted for the year?
Yes, $810,000
for sales tax. Well, I'm looking at your first highlighted thing there.
Oh.
1.5 we budgeted, and yet it shows year to date we've already received that 1.5.
Yeah, that's the beginning of the year for beginning fund balance. That's all there at the beginning of the year.
Oh, I see.
So it's different than everything else.
I gotcha.
It kind of throws you off a little bit.
Okay. So everything else in year to date, in theory, would be at 50% if we were right at budget.
Right. The red numbers show that we haven't made budget, but then we're not supposed to make budget yet.
Right, yeah.
Until the end of the year. What I wanted to do is make this very graphic. If you look at a black number, it's ahead of budget, or it's an item that wasn't budgeted at all, like sales tax mitigation, $37,000, and we're going to be getting more of that before the year's over. So I was just trying to give you a very graphic picture of what's going on with revenue. The black numbers are the numbers that are ahead of budget. The red numbers are behind the annual budget, but
right.
Everything else, but they're coming along just fine. There's some more here. It's the same story. Building permits, as you can see, they're way over. We budgeted 20 and we've got 72,000. this water rights compensation, this was a one-time thing, and we didn't anticipate that, so we hadn't budgeted for that, so that's a windfall. Everything is coming in. It's just, and then I want to show you this little picture right here. Once again, this is the end of the general fund right down here. As you can see, at the end of July, we should be at 58.88. And we're at 64.11. So we're ahead of the budget. We're ahead of the budget. Okay. Then you look down here at the utility tax fund. And this is very interesting. In July, this is July, once again, we received $107,000 in electricity utility tax. $25,000 for, this is like Cascade Natural Gas, and which we made budget already, and we still have another payment coming this year. So we know that this is going to be over. And so to take this money right here, in July, we'll distribute 50% of that to the general fund. So I took this number right here and I stuck it in the general fund. I obviously haven't done this yet for July, but I just wanted to give you a picture of what's going on. So at the end of July, the general fund, the money the general fund gets from the utility tax fund is ahead. It should be 58.33. It's at 67.66 because of the way utility taxes are coming in. This natural gas from the state, there's two more payments to be of this that will be coming in this year. One in the 8th month, one in the 11th month. So it just looks very, very healthy, and that's why I was so optimistic in my report. And I wanted to show you that just because July is kind of this ongoing picture of that whole idea of revenue. And so I took these two funds and wanted to show that.
Keep those air conditioners running, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm paying a lot of tax on that.
Yeah.
Are there any questions?
On the building permit one, I was kind of surprised to see we only budgeted $20,000. We thought we'd receive in building permits with $80 million of school going on. Shame on us.
We did talk to the school district about if they had any major projects that were going to be going again this year, because they paid us well over 200, they paid us about $230,000 last year.
Last year, okay.
And they felt we were covered. I think a lot of that is not the school district.
Really?
It's other activity with homes and stuff like that that are being done. So, yeah, it kind of threw us off, you know. Of course, I like to be thrown off the net, right?
Yeah.
So I just gives you a picture of kind of what's going on.
Can you, in a minute or less, tell us why the natural gas is state natural gas versus you had to call them for natural gas? Why?
The difference is it's called brokered natural gas.
Oh.
And so that's
what's going to the plants.
Yes, it has a different category.
Okay.
They set tanks today at All American Propane, and they had cranes coming in. And that was Daryl Lepp, but he was down there this morning, bright and early, and doing his inspections. And everybody is happy. The owner of the company and the manager of the company, and everything's moving right along there. So,
progress.
Okay. I guess we'll go to number three, Department of Transportation. Jay, are you going to, this letter of understanding?
No, I think you got the wrong.
Do I get?
It's a SR-24 industrial area project report.
Okay.
Anyways, we conducted a public meeting last Wednesday, I believe it was, to basically inform everybody of where we're at with the industrial area. I'll just kind of throw this up here real quick so everyone can see and kind of go back over it again and what we did explain to everyone. Again, the boundaries of the area, those we've all seen it before, of the whole industrial area that reaches all the way over here to the port property and then borders along the bottom side of SR 26. We went back over the area and what we're doing and where we're at. In this meeting, what we wanted to do, because we're working on the design of this area right now, and in this meeting, what we wanted to do was talk about access issues in and out of mainly the west side of SR 24 in here. Currently, these are the streets that are designated, and they all have access onto SR 24. But during this process, we got to thinking, we need to address access onto 24. And so we wanted to bring some of those issues up in the public meeting. And I think there was about 30 people here. And what we did, just to start conversation with them and thinking about it, is offered two different options, just for speaking points. Start with this one here. This one here is basically as it is laid out and pave what is there and move forward. And everybody kind of thought, okay, that's what's there. That looks good. We talked about the radiuses and everything else on and off the highway types of roads that we would build in the area. Another option thrown out there was, and this one's a little different, and it sparked some conversation. Good and bad. What it's showing like Lawson Street right here, these hexed out areas. We proposed taking all of these areas here and giving them back to the property owners and actually only developing the paved portions that you see here and realigning Canning Street with Concrete Drive to help out this offset that's currently here that's real awkward. This option here would leave two public accesses onto SR 24 that are paved. The rest of them, this property would share this one back with a private drive here and a private drive here. And that sparked a little bit of conversation. One of the main concerns was that we're going to be putting a lot of traffic onto just two intersections here on SR 24 instead of letting people filter off, you know, as they could. A lot of these businesses here would, you know, they'd still be okay. They could use their private drives, but we wouldn't have to incur the costs of developing them. Some of these streets down here off of SR 24, in order to be built to standards, is really going to impact the property owners on each side because the road's going to have to be raised and it's just going to create more issues. So that one sparked quite a bit of conversation, good and bad, and we took notes. What we're doing now, what came out of this meeting, was we're going to go down and conduct a door-to-door survey. Gray and Osborne is putting together a questionnaire that's going to help us understand what's really going on down here. We talked about what types of road are we going to put in there. Are we going to put in an industrial road with borrow ditches on each side, or are we going to actually go curb and gutter, or curb and gutter and sidewalk? And that sparked some interest also. You know, trying to keep this as more of an industrial setting and try to discourage foot traffic in the area. And we got kind of some mixed results on that. So I think what we came down to is that we want to go and visit with these people door to door, each and every business, and just actually look at the ground and see what the issues are and put that together and come up with a new proposal. These weren't set in stone. We even talked about, okay, well, you know, we could add a couple straight throughs, more or less, and see what we come up with, a good design. The reason that we're talking about the access issues right here, right now, is before we get into the infrastructure design, we gotta know what's going to be on the ground out there to design the infrastructure around it, such as the groundwater, storm sewer. All that has to be designed with knowing exactly what we're gonna do down here.
Biggest problem I see with the whole Broadway extended project is the two-lane traffic on Highway 24. There's just a tremendous amount of traffic there, and it's gonna get heavier and heavier as we as we progress?
As we did on North Broadway, yeah, we talked about that. And as we did on North Broadway to help with some of the rutting that's going on up there is we removed the shoulders and put a center turn lane in from, I think, First Street North. And that actually helped relieve it quite a bit and a lot of the rutting in the road. WashDOT has a plan here. We don't know when they will ever get to it, but it's going to be a full center turn lane with north and south lanes on each side. But that's out of this project or at this point in time.
And hopefully when the port develops their property east of there,
mm-hmm.
they'll have a loop to where you can go down to
Reynolds.
Yeah, Reynolds Road.
Yes.
You know, and get some traffic going that way.
That would help divert some of it also.
Yeah. But that's down the road many years, I would mm-hmm. assume.
But again, the as this project goes, we have the design money, the engineering, and we need to start with the infrastructure. And so we're moving forward on the infrastructure with everything as it is, how it is. And we thought that we had better discuss these access issues before we got into there, you know, got the cart in front of the horse.
Well, these roads that with the X's on them, you're going to turn back to the property owner. I mean, there's no standard what they need to do to those roads. And we talked about this in project improving access for snow plows and fire trucks and that. Well, what have we really gained if we don't go in there and pave those roads?
What you do gain is more of a controlled situation. And you're having this, if you look at the east side over here, there is one big loop that services the majority here without all the individual accesses. There's individual driveways, but no through streets that are being maintained. And so this realigning concrete and canning, hopefully in the future, could drive a signal at the intersection and help with traffic flows here. Because if you did end up with a signal here eventually, even the spur off of SR-26, a signal here would give a break in traffic through here to allow this spur to come off and on. I mean that's not saying that it would happen, but it is eventually could. You have more control at intersections with signal lights than you do each and every single one of these. These property owners can use this as private drives. They would be, if you look here, they would be paved in with an apron, but they would be reverted back to the owners.
So they would still have access?
They would, but they would be private driveways.
They would use that for ingress and egress for customers to their business.
Correct. And there's some some businesses that would benefit for additional parking that are really stretched right now, and this would be theirs.
But so they park on the road? So what if you were going back to the business in the back block?
Back here?
Yeah.
You
and
would
they're
have
parked
to,
there, and
you
can't
have
get
to
through.
Take one of the paved routes in, because these would be private.
So those being private, technically they could shut them down, turn it into a parking lot.
They could, but it would be private property.
Right.
And it's just as any other business, it would give more property back. It was just a suggestion that it would give more property back.
How was it received? Good?
Not, well, I think people are thinking about it. It sparked, how are we going to, their concern was, how are we going to get everybody through these? You know, well, you're not. You're all of these businesses through here would have shared access. So all of these front businesses here do not have to use these roads if they don't want to. The back businesses would have to use these here. But this was just one option. You could even add one back in and then, you know, delete the others. This owner here, it was brought up that why don't we realign Tecker Park with Curtis Drive on the opposite side. The property owner was not here to know how well that was received or not. But we will visit, I believe it's Oasis, we will visit with this person and bring that option up. We just threw these out there for talk points, and we want everybody to look at them and understand them. And I think people are interested in what we're trying to do, and they want to think about it. And the door-to-door.
Yeah, you'll know after that, after the door-to-door.
Because then you're out there looking at it on the ground. But I do want to say that some of these businesses are going to be negatively affected by putting some of these in here. You know, by the time you get your correct slope approach to a state highway, because you're building it all new, you're going to be building up quite a bit, which is going to leave a lot of businesses basically in a hole.
So. Now, after we get a final design down and figure out what we want, do we have to take this to the state, since we're dealing with the state highway and access on it, and get their approval for it?
No, right now, all of these accesses are approved accesses. The only one that we would have to deal with the state on is going to be this one right here. If we do realign, we can go in there and develop it all, and they'll look at our approach designs for existing access. We're not asking for any more access. And even if we did revert back to a property owner, these would still be accesses, but they're private now. They are there.
I didn't understand your point about building them up. If I was a business owner, and you gave me that road, and it's a gravel road with access to 24, I wouldn't do anything with it.
No. If we develop them in our first option, if we take and build all of them as they are new, then each and every one of these is going to have to be brought up to a standard.
Okay.
But if they revert back to the owner, here is their driveway.
How about the east side? How come there's no, isn't there roads in between Curtis and Concrete?
No. Everything within here is private driveways. These are the only two accesses. And this was designed a lot later on, and this is more of an industrial loop.
Is Curtis where Ladd Irrigation is?
Yes, Ladd Irrigation sits right here.
Okay. Yeah, I'd have to ponder this too, because my thinking was we were going to pave all the roads that were out there, and obviously the second plan doesn't encompass that. Yeah,
save a lot of money, but I'm wondering how far does it go in the development of the South Broadway area. I mean, we're not going to, it's not going to be much different than it is right now. Basically,
well, it would be.
I visualize maybe turn lanes for trucks and similar to the Moses Lake industrial parks, and instead of private roadways that dead end, and it's just a different concept than what I.
Well, this is one extreme to the other. Pave everything or pave as little as possible. And the way we explained it to the property owners and the business owners was, we're not telling you it's this or this. It's these are points of discussion. It can be anywhere in between or all of it. You know, this was a talking point to get everybody thinking about it, because there will be some issues with developing these. Nothing that we can't overcome, but we just want everybody to understand that it's you're not just going to get asphalt coming up on the existing gravel. It's going to have to be designed correctly.
But most of those roads anyway, the people that are facing 24 don't use those to access their business. Correct? Most of them are just... Right. Because like Saddle Mountains between Moon and Canning Street, they come right off the SR-24, they don't use a side road.
Correct.
You come down further this way, their businesses come right off of 24. They don't come off of Lawson Street.
Correct.
And so on and so on, except for maybe Lawrence Oil, which they have a loop off of 24.
They turn in here and then comes in.
Right.
Am I in the right spot? Yeah.
Yeah, they're probably a customer that would be affected by getting those big trucks in and out of there if we were to put a big corner in there for trucks and stuff.
Construction too. Yeah. Going in there to get them in and out.
But one of the things that we did bring up in here also was that all of these radiuses will be improved to accept the types of vehicles that are in coming in and out of here. And that's going to be part of the survey also, is what type of vehicles, what's your quantity of vehicles that you expect to see. And then these radiuses will be set for that. And then it brought up curb and gutter, street widths. Nobody really liked the curb and gutter idea, simply because they probably want more access off. So, okay, you go to a borrow ditch. But one of the downfalls to a borrow ditch is you have less usable property because you have ditches on both sides of the road. And then we talked about mainly just curb and gutter down this side of Roosevelt to control stormwater, and then doing borrow ditches east and west. They were all points of discussion for people to think about.
It'll be interesting to get the results of your door-to-door.
It's going to take, I believe we're going to start a little later this week, and it's probably going to take 3 to 4 days down there doing it.
Has anybody brought up the subject of a LID? And I'm not quite sure what that stands for, but I know it's where the property owners are responsible for putting some money into this project.
Your local improvement district.
Yes.
Right. That's not where we're going at this point in time. I think that we've kind of made a commitment to seeking out the grant money for a lot of this, as much as
that's
we
what happened last
can.
Time. And boy, it went over like a lead balloon.
It ended.
Yeah, but if they want,
you're going to bring a water line by here, and it's going to cost you $40,000, and you're going to pay it. Well, it didn't work.
That ends.
Yeah, to me, those people have been paying the same taxes that the people in.
Yeah, this should have been done a long time ago.
Yeah,
but I would challenge somebody to see what taxes they pay, and over the last 20 years, whether they even come close to $6 million. Property tax isn't that much in that district. And to say they paid $6 million in property tax, I believe, is a stretch.
A lot of the benefit of this project right now, just to help address that, is out of this picture, all the way to Bench Road, is a main extension of a trunk sewer to the new sewer line that we just put in to remove the lift station. So we're not just talking about a benefit of this area only, but of areas to the south, all the way to Bench Road, and also to the east. I mean, that's a lot of the costs right there.
Well, the paving, though, will be expensive, and that's a direct benefit to that area.
Well, I'm not so sure that property, you know, that property taxes totaled $6 million, but sales tax benefits and all the other benefits that the city gets off from it is probably 10 times that amount. I mean, that area has been abused for 20 years. And, you know, we are going to secure grant money to fix this up, to make it right.
Everything we can.
Nothing has changed down there for 25 years. Nothing. They're still using septic tanks, and the ground is wet, and get into those back lots, and needs drained, and it's going to look the same 25 years from now if we don't jump in and improve this and make it attractive for people to come and do business and set up business.
Another
question. How wide are those right of ways? If they did revert to the owners, how much property would these owners be going to get back to them?
They're 66 feet, so you would revert back 33 feet to each one.
How far is it from 24 to Roosevelt?
I'm believe those are, you're almost 300 feet. I will have to look at that. But they are 66.
I'm trying to get an idea of how track that would be. By the way, I'm about independent.
Okay.
So I just wonder how, you know, if it's just a narrow strip like a regular access street in the city, then that's not a whole lot of property, but that's not.
We're talking the full right of way. The streets are actually, I believe, about 30 feet, but the full right of way. And I believe there is some encroachment already in the area.
Yeah.
So it would be killing two
birds
with one
stone. There's some fences that are going to need to be moved. It looks
that's
like
another. That's another issue. Is when you go in here and actually determine right of way and road widths and borrow ditches, people are going to realize that they're losing a lot of property. It was just something we want them to see both sides of every issue. Not that we're pushing this, but we want them to see both sides of every issue.
Well, I know they're a pretty, the group out there, they got to buy into this. This
correct.
Has to work for them. And I like the idea of the door-to-door thing and put all these ideas together and because if they, you're not going to, this happened 10 years ago, and they went and told them, well, we're going to give you water and sewer, and it's going to cost you so much a linear foot, whatever frontage you have on the SR-24. And they got thrown out of a lot of the businesses downtown, down in that area. So they are a pretty feisty group, but they're a good group, and over the years they've created a lot of sales that turns into revenue for the city in the form of good services, sales taxes. We just owe it to them to improve their area there.
Shouldn't this project extend out further down Concrete Drive?
Right here?
The port will pay for that, I'm sure.
Well, actually, if you look, I'll
propose. Well, because like on this picture we got in our packet,
yeah,
it extends out further.
Actually, yes, that's what it would be.
Is that the county services
building? This is where we currently have right-of-way to. Same down here. So these are probably a little deceptive.
I was at the meeting and representing Evergreen, and it was very positive. They had their opportunity to speak, and they're excited to see people visit, get to put more into it, because they ask questions, want to know what the trucks are that are going on the roads, what the tonnage is going to be, things like that was spoken about. And, you know, I think we have, they're into this. They want to see it happen.
Yes.
It was a very, very positive meeting when we left, so it was good to see.
And 24 is just a state highway in the city limits, so that's controlled, the condition of it, repaving it, redoing it is all state responsibility?
Currently, but the state is also imposing some, I guess you'd call them latecomers, or not latecomers yet, but there's some stipulations when you build or improve along SR-24 that the state wants to collect money from you for the eventual widening and the center turn lane of SR-24.
What is the possibility of, there's not a whole lot of room to the west, it looks like. You know, it looks like some of those lots are fairly small, and but looks like there is some room to the east for maybe another lane of traffic or putting in another 12 feet to make a turn lane in the center.
That's their plan right now is just a center turn lane. How that lays out within the right-of-way and how the state does that in the state right-of-way, they haven't shown us anything yet.
Don't you need to kind of know that so that you know if you go with plan A, turning radiuses and getting up on the highway as it is now versus
We're going to have to change all those if they widen that road?
That'll be a point in design once we determine which ones we are really going to do. That'll have to be something that we go over with WashDOT. That might be a good way to force out their design. In all reality, because they might have some preliminary designs that they just don't want to turn loose of yet. But if we start working down here and start showing them our designs, that's time for them to speak up and say, wait a minute, you know.
How's this going to fit into the
exactly
big picture here?
Exactly.
See, I'm thinking, normally the impression I get from the state, as these areas get busier and busier, and Bench in 24 is a stellar example. I mean, that's just craziness out there, that once the state gets involved, they want to limit access. So it's possibility. I mean, we show paved where only two accesses, that the state might be mandating that yes, we only want those two accesses. We don't want all these little accesses out to a state highway.
Well, and again, these ones that we talked about eliminating and reverting them back to the property owners would still be accesses. They are currently an access. And that's something that we do have to answer with WashDOT, is now that we're giving this back to the property owner, is it going to allow it to be a driveway? And if WashDOT says no, then okay, that just solved our whole problem right there.
Plan B just went out the window.
Exactly. Yeah. Those are all things that need to be discussed, but what we're trying to do is get to a point so we can keep moving forward with design. Mm-hmm. And discussions with WashDOT is going to, you know, be part of that. Lots of unanswered questions in this, and we want to get it right.
Yeah. Thank you, Jay.
You're welcome.
Police reports. Grant awards.
Mayor, members of council, good evening. Just a quick update, and I'll be brief about the grants. September 30th, our RUAD grant is coming to a close, so Bob Ritchie will no longer be employed as the grant coordinator for that RUAD Reducing Underage Drinking grant. We've done just about as good a job with that as we can. It's coming to a close, so September 30th, we will not get any more funds with regard to carrying on the efforts. We do know that there's value in compliance checks and the shoulder taps that we did on with the use of grant funds, so we will continue to do our enforcement efforts as much as budget and time will allow. Last year we had applied for and received a grant from the Office of Crime Victims Advocacy in the amount of $15,000. The grant pays 10% of my base salary for the work that I do on the Adams County, Grant County, DV Sexual Assault Investigation Consortium, my work with the Adams County Community Network, and some other programs that we're doing here in the police department with regard to domestic violence. The balance of the money, of the $15,000, we are able to spend on goods and services for training officers, purchasing DV forms and pamphlets and information that we can give to victims, since our whole focus is to improve how the community responds to domestic violence cases and victims. We have, I've applied for that grant again this year, and that's in the process, and I don't see any reason why we won't receive that again for the next state fiscal year. When we get that award, I'll work with Mike during the budgeting process to make sure that we can show that as a revenue. This is a reimbursement type grant, so whatever we spend, we have to pay for it first, and then it gets reimbursed into our account. And usually with my budget, when it's already set, if it's not allocated out there somewhere, I pay it out, I get reimbursed, but it goes back into the general fund, so it doesn't ever show if my budget is flush. Sometimes I go in the hole, even though the money was really put back. So. The third grant, as you are aware, we applied for a stimulus money grant from the Justice Department. And with that grant, by predetermined formula, we were allowed or authorized to request so much money. The money was $13,587. A lot of money for a small project, not enough money for any large projects. So after the council held public hearings to determine if we were to apply for that grant, what we decided was that we would reduce the impact to the city's budget for the next few years and go ahead and use this particular money to purchase new computers for the cars, which are going to be starting to break down next year. So we will be spending that all in one fell swoop, probably January, February of next year. That will replace all of the computers in the patrol cars themselves. And then it's my plan that for the next at least 3 years, the city won't have any equipment purchases with regard to computer equipment for the cars. I think that we might be able to extend that out 4 years again, but that will depend on how fast the technology moves. It does move pretty fast, but you know, sometimes you can kind of slow it down for yourself. So we're anticipating that, and if we do that, then we won't have to worry about car computers until 2014. I did look at the COPS grant this year. That was part of the stimulus package as well. The feds had offered up, you can hire COPS, we'll pay beginning salary, base salary for an officer who has been laid off, or we might even look at new positions just to get people back to work. They were going to pay the starting salary and benefits up to $50,000 for 3 years, and the city was going to be on the hook for a fourth year, plus the city was on the hook for any raises. So if they only paid the base salary, so anything, all of the step increases and stuff like that would be borne by the city. After looking at it real closely, I pretty well figured out, and after talking with Barb Anderson too, that the grant was going to be too competitive. It wasn't something that we would have been awarded anyway, so I just did not even apply for that. And I just got word from the COPS grant program that it was extremely competitive. In fact, Seattle had put in for a lot of officers and they didn't even get any of the money. So where it went, we don't exactly know. But grant money right now, as you know, the government is cutting some programs, even though they're giving out a lot of stimulus money. So grants are getting a little bit tighter. So we'll keep looking for them. And if it suits us, we'll bring it to you and apply and try to get those extra dollars to help out. Any questions?
I have a question, Chief.
Yeah.
The RUAD program, is that going to totally eliminate what the high school is doing? I know they're going to be involved with that. How's that going to affect?
No, I think we're taking a group of kids back to Texas, I think, this time for the leadership council. So I think that we've got the seeds planted at the school. We've got the nucleus of the group. Hopefully that will carry on through the Students Against Drunk Driving efforts that they have there. And you know, we do have, through the Adams County Community Network, Barb Anderson is always looking for a little bit of dollars, and if we'll keep them in mind too. So if there is some kind of school program we can do, she might be able to take care of
that. So the grant loss mostly just affects your staff member that was working through
that? Right. Bob Ritchie, he'll be gone. We hired him as a consultant grant coordinator. A lot of the money that we did paid for training for officers on how to do enforcement with regard to selling alcohol to minors and things like that. And then it also paid overtime for going out and doing emphasis patrols, where we actually did compliance checks, sent people in and made sure that the stores were doing what they were supposed to be doing. And then we actually hired kids to do shoulder taps, which was stand outside the store and ask a stranger to buy them beer. And those were all very successful, and we'll continue with those enforcement activities, again, though, as budget and time allows. So
I didn't want that, because I know some of the kids that are involved there. Mm-hmm. I actually am a teacher also.
Oh, okay, okay.
I teach at McFarland, but yeah. I know some of the kids that are involved with that, and I know it would really frustrate a lot. Mm-hmm. They were very excited.
I think that we have some very good, a very good foundation of young people there that are going to continue on with those efforts in teaching their fellow students about drinking. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thanks, Chief.
Thank you, Mayor.
Item number five, committee reports.
I got one that I'll bring up. Me and Tim met with Heyman and the attorney last Monday for our council meeting about the Northland Cable franchise contract renewal that's coming up. And we have two things to discuss as a council, what we would like to do. One of them is a public hearing. It's called a Sturgis hearing. To accept comment from the public about Northland and if they're holding to their previous contract. And another thing is we really can't discuss on which channels they could carry, but we could discuss the type of programming that they have on them. We could take public comment on that, and that could be held at a Sturgis hearing. The second thing was before we were not able to collect utility tax on our cable, from Northland Cable. We were held to a 5% franchise fee. But now, with the new contract, we can collect a 5% franchise fee and still collect our utility tax if we want to impose it. The only thing that we'll do though is revert it back to the citizens, and that actually be paying.
So the community, we need a little bit of community input on the type of programs being that are on Northland Cable now and what they would like to see more of or less of, or and you could share that with them at the meeting?
Yes.
Are we getting a 5% franchise fee now?
Yes.
So we get income from Northland Cable?
Pardon?
Do we get income from Northland Cable as a franchise fee?
5%. That's what was negotiated in the last contract.
Any idea what the total dollar amount for that annually is?
No, I don't.
But it's significant.
I don't know. What about the dish and everything else? Do we have the 6% utility tax on those?
Utility taxes were limited to that broker natural gas, to the electric utility, and the other natural gas, which is the one that's delivered to homes, Cascade, and then telephone tax. Those are the only four.
Cell phones?
Yeah.
And this is something for this council to decide with this new contract if we want to impose our utility tax on.
Any more committee reports? Chief, you mentioned the community networking. You go to the community networking,
yes,
meetings?
Yes, the Adams County Community Network.
Do they end up getting funding, and are they doing okay? Councilman Brodahl is on that committee, and she's not here right now, but I was wanting to get an update.
It's still up in the air. It's not looking real good. So I think we're Barb Anderson, who's, of course, in charge of that whole deal through the hospital there, she's waiting until she sees how things really shake out in the fall when the state goes into their next fiscal year.
Okay.
It's not looking real good.
They do good things for our community and our area and our county, and sure it would be nice to keep that organization going.
It would.
Thank you.
Unfinished business?
I got a quick question for Jay. In this hot weather, how's our rails holding, our water supply?
Doing really well, actually. Not well, pours back on, everything's been holding off. We haven't been running everything 24/7. They're getting a break at night.
Have we had to use well 6 at all? Or
no. Yeah. It's worked really well. We have exercised sticks just to make sure
that it will work when you push the button. That's nice. Yeah.
But that just went to waste. So, but it's ready. But we've done it well.
And well four is the one with the new submersible?
Yes.
And that all went good? And
yes.
New business?
I had some citizen input, and Debbie, since you're here representing staff, maybe you could write a brief memo to me and council. It's about a vacant lot in town on Shelley and Hamlet. Weeds over 4 feet high. I think it's the old Mitchick property. And what the status on that is, and two, if I could explain to citizens what kind of process we have to go through to get on private property and contain weeds so they understand it. It's not something that's going to happen overnight.
Well, that's code enforcement. Yeah. I mean, if it's a weed issue.
Yeah, they might be all over that one.
If it's a weed issue, that would be code enforcement.
They're probably all over it. I just want a status as to where we're at on that one. And it is bad. I drove by it after I got comments, and it's not good.
Nobody's disagreeing with you.
In this weather right now, that's why we'll have a second burning.
Yeah.
Any more new business? We'll adjourn the workshop. Thank you.